Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the World of Ideas. This is the World of Ideas show. We're here every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We are here for 1 hour to understand our world better and better and better. And in fact, you know what the mission statement is. I wish I can hear y'all say it. It's to change the world one conversation at a time. That's what we are all about. You know that's what I'm all about every single day of my life. I'm just trying to make this place a little bit better, one conversation at a time, all right? We don't need bullets. All you need is a vocabulary, some words, some compassion, understanding, and maybe a coffee shop. I need that. So let's get into it. As you all know, we got something special going on today, actually for the next couple of weeks. We got a series happening, Black Lives Series. That's right. We're going to talk about blackness, African-Americanness, Africanness, all that good stuff, important things, controversial subjects, you know. And I just can't wait to jump into it. And I'm going to talk more about why we're going to do this for the next few weeks. It's very important. So for those of you who are tuning in to the World of Ideas, you're here to talk about some ideas, ideas that matter. Like I always say, if you want to understand people, if you want to understand a culture, a group, a nation, even an individual, tap into their ideas. See if you can listen closely to what they say, and you will get an understanding about that person. Where are they coming from? And that is how you can find common ground, which is very important, right? Our humanity relies on the notion that there is common ground. And so far that common ground comes across as passion for life. It comes across as compassion for other people and their experiences. It also comes across in conversation. Okay, that's how we can manifest it. That's how we can transfer it and communicate it. And that's why this show is important, because this show is really just a microcosm of the kinds of things that need to happen at a grand scale, okay? And we are trying. We are trying. We got the United Nations up and running. We're trying. Some people feel that it's not effective, but history shows that, you know, can you name one thing that is perfect, that functions perfectly? Right. Get back to me when you do. So we want to tap into all these positive, constructive aspects of our reality and build on them. Like I said before, you can always make a list of the worst of the worst. But we got to overcome that tendency, because we can get caught up in it and become pessimistic, nihilistic, and lose out on opportunities right in front of our faces. And I don't want us to do that. And that's why we're here on this World of Ideas show. Okay, we got the review of the week coming up. And once we finish up with the review of the week, then we're going to head into our main topic. And our main topic for today is what it means to be black. I know we talk about that a lot, and so we'll come back to that in a second. in a second. So, dangerous ideas for this week. I got two dangerous ideas I want to just throw out there real fast. And I got two great ideas, things that I want us to keep in mind. All right. Dangerous idea number one, the shooting of the police officers in Ferguson. That's dangerous. That's bad. Now, I know some black nationalists out there saying, well, you know, we got to let them know we mean business. Okay, I feel you. You know, you want to live by that. Do unto others as they do unto you. It's risky business, especially in this day and age. And, you know, we want to figure out, you know, what is effective. And especially after this, you know, exposing investigation of the Ferguson Police Department by the Justice Department, much has been exposed. And I think that that is progress in the way that we can say now our law enforcement, at least the corruptive aspects of it, don't have a free pass because we're making changes from within. Not just from without, but from within. And that's important. And so whenever we can connect with changes happening on multiple fronts, we have to capitalize on that. History tells us repeatedly that there are a lot of unintended consequences from violence. And I'm not rejecting the notion of violence. I'm not rejecting the notion of fighting and defending yourself and being courageous. But I am taking to court this notion of being a vigilante and, you know, a violent maverick. You know, we don't need that right now. We need people with sensible plans because we've come too far to drop the ball. A lot of people don't really see this change. But like I was saying not too long ago, actually yesterday, you know, change is that which has allowed me to, let's say, go to grad school, to meet people from different races, travel around the world. Kinds of things that family members who lived before civil rights movement did not have access to. That's serious business, okay? People have died for us without a gun. Some had guns, but many didn't. Died for us to have this opportunity, so I think we should be busy taking advantage of these opportunities. And it's easier said than done. And, you know, so the young brother who was caught, and, you know, I think the investigation is still going on. But more or less, we have a brother, African-American dude, got caught. And, you know, I'll be curious to hear his story. I mean, a lot of us, as we're going to talk about today, we are conditioned by certain set of ideas and experiences that are caused by other people, right? And they brew and they simmer and they boil within us and get us acting in all sorts of crazy ways. So I want to be careful about how I indict a particular person or characterize them, but I am challenging this notion fundamentally, this reckless, you know, shooting of police officers. And obviously I'm going to challenge police officers being reckless with the power of force that we bestow upon them as public servants. All right, so it goes both ways. We have to set a standard for both scenarios, as civilians and for public servants. All right, so that's really why, you know, that's a dangerous idea. This whole idea, this whole project, this experiment of democracy, which I was getting ready to say I believe in it, and maybe I'll just go ahead, just say I believe in it, but not without reason or rationalizing or reasoning, I should say, the issue. Democracy, as up to date, as of yet, seems to be the most just system of politics. Is it perfect? No. Well, because the constituents aren't perfect. I mean, if we were perfect, you know, as the founding fathers noted, if we, you know, had the hearts of angels, you know, things would be all right. Or if we had men who were angels, we wouldn't care which one of them, you know, would be a king or not. So a monarchy would be fair game. But that's not the case. But there are certain temptations that are difficult for us to resist. So we set up safety measures in our American Republican democratic system. So we got people on the job doing their thing. And we want to make sure they understand that they're doing their thing for us so that we can enjoy ourselves and have a happy life. But that means their responsibility is on both sides. So this whole idea of shooting the police officers, it gets deep. It gets really, 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 really deep. And I know that there are some unfair situations within this, but we got to talk about it. I don't care what you say. We got to talk about this, right? We can't sweep it under the rug. And, you know, I'm well aware of police brutality, but that do not justify, you know, reckless and random shootings. All right. Next dangerous idea. I won't spend too much time on this because the next few weeks, in a sense, is dedicated to this dangerous idea. The McDonald's tragedy. Horrible to see young black teenage girls beating, assaulting, oh my goodness, another young black girl. What makes it even worse? I'm trying to weigh, and this is silly, but I'm trying to weigh which is worse between the actual beating inside Starbucks. Sorry, not Starbucks. Another event. Inside McDonald's. And the crowd that's just watching. Seriously, was that like a sort of a throwback to some kind of Roman gladiator event where, you know, everyone giving a thumbs up by their lack of intervention? Seriously, come on. I don't know which was more barbaric. Perhaps what the girls were doing, that whole fight, has a little bit more sense. They were part of a gang. There were some issues. No matter how trivial those issues were, you know, it sparked something, and they had a reason. But for the mob of people, youngsters and adults alike, to sit there and watch this brutal, brutal attack, assault. I mean, I can get, if you want to see what happens, see if the girl holds her own, she starts to lose. But she's on the floor, getting stomped, kicked in the stomach, in the face. People, I cannot believe it. That's really dangerous. That's crazy. That mob, I think that's worse than the violence. It's, you know, there was like an appetite for violence. My goodness. That was crazy. That really is crazy. So I got both of those things on this scale. And there are other things that kind of get me too. But right now, those two things, I don't know, what do you think about that? You know, feel free to call in and let me know what you think about that. That's outrageous. Outrageous. What does that say about the humanity, the present humanity on planet Earth? Okay. And that's just a speck among the other violence that's going on day in and day out around the world. And yet I still hold the opinion, which I believe is a fact and has been proven through data, and I'm willing to argue this, that the world is becoming less violent. And all of this, I got the nerve to say, you know, the world's becoming less violent. Well, we'll talk about that later. There's a show I did on that subject, and I recommend, you know, some studies in Human Rights Watch, and also Steven Pinker's text. I think it's called The Better Angels of Ourselves, something like that. And you can hit me up if you want that information. Alrighty. So that is crazy. Those two ideas are the most dangerous ideas for me of the week right now. All right, the shooting of the two police officers. You know, it's beyond the black versus white, black versus system, the oppressed versus the oppressors. Okay. There's a lot in that. And the McDonald's tragedy, this whole notion of, you know, our kids just fight and fight. They're part of gangs and they're doing this. And other issues, like, you know, there was no protest against this. you know, like, I'm sure you probably heard this in conversations, but, you know, imagine if that was a situation where white girls were beating up the black girl. Whoa. Or the black girls were beating up the white girl. Oh, my goodness. It would be crazy. You know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Rudy Giuliani blamed that whole incident on Obama, right? Now, can you imagine what have happened if that were like four black girls jumping on one white girl? That would be crazy, right? And yeah, I'm not trying to play like this racist card or whatever, but you know, I'm basically saying we should take this matter as seriously as any one of these possibilities could affect a certain group of people, right? So some people are galvanized, they are catalyzed, they are provoked based on the constituents of a particular catastrophe or issue. But fundamentally, this issue is a public concern. And like any other interracial issue, we should take interracial issues very seriously. So that's why I'm doing this. That's what I'm talking about, black lives, for the next few weeks. All right, so those two ideas, dangerous ideas, chop it up, find somebody to talk about, because I feel like ideas can spread through these conversations and we can shake it up in our culture. We need a cultural revolution, a cultural baptism. Yes, amen. Okay, great ideas, at least right now on the surface. One great idea I think is going on is these new Japanese robot suits. So as of now, they're being used to help people who are in therapy and muscles are not working well, bones are weak, accidents. All right, and so these they're like attachments, like metal attachments that can read your nervous system, your signals from your brain to certain muscles. So when you want to move a certain muscle, the device picks it up and activates a certain motion of the different metal parts and allow a person to move their limbs, gives them extra strength and balance and stuff like that. That's pretty cool. And I saw a few elderly people with them on, or people who are in therapy. And also, they're making some for nurses, so people who have to carry others, you know, around in hospitals and stuff like that. And they help them get from one room to the next room or something. So that's cool. So we have the embryo of Iron Man. As a matter of fact, speaking of Iron Man, did you see that bionic arm that's going on? Yeah, that was kind of cool. Okay, so that's a great idea. I mean, you know, technology is coming along. Of course, there's always some, you know, there are unintended consequences. So who gets to own the technology? What would it be used for? Would it be militarized? And if that happens, you know, a bunch of robots fighting each other. All righty, so it'd be like, soldiers have to learn how to play Wii games, you know. There'll be jobs for the young kids who are into games now. Who knows? The next great idea, I think, of the week is, all right, it has nothing to do with robots. It has something to do with technology and stuff. But in the first time in 40 years, CO2, carbon dioxide emissions, did not increase while the economy expanded. That means businesses collectively around the world are dealing with this climate change issue and trying to find ways and actually utilizing ways to cap emissions, to reduce the toxins in our atmosphere. This is big. We're talking about the planet, everybody. Forget the ideas. We are talking about life and death for the entire planet, for the entire species. And if you're religious, for God's plan. Well, there's a caveat on that. People, you know, who believe a certain understanding of the Bible, you know, they have a certain interpretation. They feel like, oh, that's why we don't think climate change will ever destroy the world. We have nothing to worry about because God's plans has to come through. And before anything happens that deviates from the plan, heaven and earth shall pass away. Yeah, but I think we still should be responsible. I don't want to play around with that. All right? He did give us brains and told us to work the land. That means we're responsible for the land. Okay? And who wants a messed up world before he comes anyway? Like, at least keep it clean as best you can before he gets back. You know, he might kick you out for that. Imagine he comes back and says, what did you do to this planet? I'm not letting you into heaven. All right, I'm deviating. But, you know, come on. Come on. I'm trying to satirize the notion that there's no need to be responsible for our actions, an environment, because of some prophecy. No, because that actually looks bad on you. Like, you're like a diplomat of the Almighty who created the universe, and you can't even keep this planet clean. Like, you refuse to. Sounds like a child. Anyway, so those two ideas I think are great ideas. Technology being used for humanity, not to destroy it, to build it up, to help people who are in need. I think that's great. That's a great example. Of course, there's the risk of it being exploited. Well, it's always a risk. We exploit our bodies. We exploit a rock. You know? People use rocks to build buildings and pyramids. Or you can use them like David did and knock people out. Right? So, you know, so that's always the constant in, you know, in how we choose to use things. So I'm talking about the notion that we will use things for the betterment of humanity. That is what's awesome. So those are the ideas of our week here, the review of the week. Dangerous ideas, shooting police officers, especially after, oh my goodness, we were cleaning house, you know, and exposing racism and unprofessionalism. All right, and so in the McDonald's tragedy, which I'm going to follow up on today, those two ideas, you know, keep those in mind. You have to talk about these things. I cannot stress it enough. You got to talk about these things. I repudiate the notion that you shouldn't talk about religion and politics. I grew up thinking that. No, that's the worst thing you can do. I mean, obviously you don't want to talk about it in certain scenarios, but that's like anything. You don't talk about you talk about it. You know, your favorite food in every scenario. There's a time and a place. So we don't need to taboo these things exclusively. All right. So I hope many of you don't have that kind of mindset. But if you do, break it now. Crack the shackles. Talk about these things. It's important. In the beginning was the Word. Okay. And it was with God. So tap into that Word and you'll be with God, metaphorically speaking. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break, ladies and gentlemen, and we want to get into the main dish. Yes, this is going to be serious. Black Lives series. This Black Lives series is going to be off the hook because it's going to tap into so many things. And I'm hoping to really incite a moral, educational, cultural revolution. And I'm going to need all of you to help out with this. So we're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to come back and chop it up on these issues. So stay tuned. Thanks again for tuning in to The World of Ideas. I'll be right back after this break. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back from the break. I'm your host, Kasan Henry. If you are tuning in now, listening to The World of Ideas. Okay, so now we're going to get to our main topic for today. Basically, I want to set off a series called The Black Lives series. And it's a spinoff, the Black Lives Matter. Okay. Now, for those of you who might react to this and say, well, you know, you're being racist or reverse racism. Listen, I love white people. I love everybody. And I'm very disappointed that we have to use these terms, that they exist. But to a certain degree, and to a certain degree, they can be very useful if understood properly. And I'll talk about that soon. So I just wanted to get that out the way. All right, we're going to have to really try to be mature in this kind of conversation here and have an open mind and have the guts to explore and study this stuff and talk about it with people, okay? And also have the courage to be honest with ourselves, all right? Yes, I'm persuading you to tap into two important ideas, race and culture, and not to just accept what you heard or what you were taught already, and not even to accept what I'm saying, but to have the audacity to look at these ideas in their eyes and say, who are you? Why are you here? Where do you come from? Are you helpful? And for the people who participate in this kind of thinking, how do I interact with them? I think this is important because otherwise we're just going to accept the status quo and come up with unproductive generalizations or become content in our private spaces and not live up to the mark, the very high mark of humanity. And that's not how I'm going to go out. And I'm sharing that with you. I don't want you to go out like that. I think we all can do something. We all can chip in to make this kind of change. So that's why I'm talking about this issue here. Okay. And as I posted on the site and on the platform here, Blog Talk Radio, this series was provoked by the recent brawl at McDonald's in Brooklyn, New York. And now, obviously, I'm not saying I just woke up. I woke up one morning and said, oh, I got to tap into Black history, into me, into my people, my identity. No, it's an ongoing thing. I mean, this is what I do every single day in different modes, in different kinds of conversations, exploring who I am and my culture, my local culture and my national culture and my global culture. And I think that they're intertwined. And so sometimes I indulge other cultures because they reflect on my own private and local cultures, the cultures that I inherited from my local environment. And so this means basically my local culture, the Black culture, which is diverse, and I'm going to get into that in a second, is full of some stuff. And I want to find out what's going on. So we're going to talk about this, and we're going to see how we are all connected and how what I do can affect what you do or how what you don't do could affect me. All right. So just for selfish reasons, I believe that if you do something, it can affect me. So I'm enlisting help from the world, from all of you, to do your thing. Doesn't necessarily have to be my thing. And I won't always agree on everything that anyone does. But if we're all trying to make a difference the best we can, sure, we're going to interconnect and find something that we can build on. And I want that kind of culture, that kind of mindset to spread faster than AIDS, to spread faster than Ebola. Okay, to spread faster than the videos that we see on World Star. How do we do that? So I'm doing my part here on this show. So we're going to talk about a lot of issues here. Every week we're going to talk about a few issues. And hopefully these issues will shed light on the state of Black people in the 21st century. So while we are talking about things of today and the things of the past, we are doing this for the purpose of constructing a beautiful tomorrow, or at least one better than today. And that beauty, improvement might not come about in very physical or tangible, palpable ways. It could just be a mindset. And that's where it starts, in our minds. You know, it's very clear now that wealth does not equal happiness. Right? So we want to tap into the fundamental source of health and wealth and happiness and what that means. And wisdom and knowledge and all that good stuff. And still have fun. All right? I'm not saying don't have your glass of champagne or go to the dance floor and do your thing to some Busta Rhymes. You know, do your thing, of course. But we got to stay on top of our business. So that's what this is all about. So we're going to talk about black identity, black solidarity, black culture, the good and the bad and the ugly and the beautiful, black education, incarceration, and leadership. We're going to get into all of that. And I'm going to have the audacity to say, listen, this is what we got wrong, and this is what we should do. And I hope people can take that and run with some of this, or say, listen, Kassan, I feel you, but I think you need to tweak it like that. And I'll go, all right, fine. Because you know what just happened there? We just built something together. All right? So we're jumping into the role of ideas, a specific set of ideas we're going to pull out. Ideas that revolve around blackness. So let's get into it. We're going to start right now. It's like, now I need some music. So here we go. The question for today is what it means to be black. And, you know, I didn't put a question mark on that, really. I'm throwing it as a question so we can, like, get ready, set our minds up. I actually got the audacity to say, listen, let me tell you what it means to be black. And so really I'm saying what it means to be black. The first thing we need to do is break down what that phrase, blackness or black, refers to at this moment when we use it, not simply the color that we say when we go into a store and say, listen, I want some black eyed peas, or, you know, I want a black pair of sneakers with some, with, you know, some white stripes, them Adidas joints, you know, them black ones. No, we're talking about something else. And let me just throw it out there. We're talking about culture and race. And so for us to understand what it means to be black, and at least for me, let me tell you some of my eye-openers. For me, when I understand the word black, when I refer to myself as a black man, as a black person coming from a black woman and a black father with black sisters, black nieces and nephews, and black friends. Let me tell you what comes to my mind now. Culture and race. And we need to understand culture and race, what those mean, what those words mean. Because if we don't, you're going to stay locked in to a flawed understanding, to a misunderstanding of what it means for you to be you as a black person and as a white person. So if you're white, Chinese, or Japanese, listen to this stuff. It's going to be good for you too. All right? So let's check this out. Culture, and foremost, it's an anthropological concept. It's a term that denotes a particular way of life. We gotta understand that. So if you say you have a black culture, you're talking about a certain set of values, customs, habits, institutions, traditions, foods, music, and all that good stuff. All right? So we are narrowing down a group of people among the entire human civilization, and we're saying, you know, these group of people here have a certain way of living and doing business, making love, making music, eating food, resolving their differences, And once we understand that aspect of it, you want to really see clearly that it's non-biological, something that is learned. Okay, you inherit it, but you don't inherit it like the way you would inherit genes and stuff, which we're going to talk about very soon. What you want to get is somebody teaching you how to do X, Y, and Z, and the importance of doing X, Y, and Z at certain times. And there's a language that communicates these different values and customs. So that's the first thing. Culture. It's a concept pointing to certain ways that people do business on Earth and with each other. And with that said, knowing that it's non-biological, it's a set of experiences and understanding, culture changes. Cultures change. They can change from within, internally. Things evolve. And we're talking about black, right? So, like, black music has changed. You know, you got hip-hop cats from back in the days, like, you know, Run DMC. And then you got Lil Wayne. And as a person who knows music, you know, I studied music theory and all that good stuff. And I did beats for rappers and made music for R&B singers. I even wrote an opera and stuff like that. And scores, I can see the difference. I can see, you know, how different musical styles change from within or from without. And that's the second part. Cultures can change from coming in contact with other cultures. So when we sample music or when we borrow words from a different language, we infect our language with different ways of looking at the world. Okay, so that's one thing. Now let's go into race. Now, race is a big concept, and we're going to have to really break this down. I'm going to move a little faster so we can get to all this good stuff, what it means to be black. But race points to a lot of stuff that most people don't think about. There's two main concepts in race that I just want to leave you with. And the first one is human biology. Okay, race points to certain biological differences that can occur in the realm of genetics, in the realm of physical anthropology, like how people look and stuff. And that's still related to genetics and evolutionary biology, zoology, human biology. Okay, and so what scientists do who study race in a proper sense of the word, they're examining human differentiation, morphological types, how to make broad generalizations on certain features, which they concluded came about because of different environments and different associations and being isolated from certain people, right? Experiencing certain kinds of conditions that causes one kind of hormone to not spread or proliferate or not, you know? And that word, basically, scientists would use is called taxonomies. They basically arrange a graph how things are distributed among human beings. So blood type. Certain races may have a certain, perhaps, blood type or a certain, you may find within a group of people a certain genetic, you know, malfunction or something like that. Now, the other aspect of race that's important is this notion of people grouping. And this is where things get screwed up. And if you're listening right now, listen to this and think about this thing. So race, the notion of differences among human beings have been exploited, misunderstood, and used to group people, to manufacture and label others. Othering, okay, based on their culture, based on a perceived difference that's not really that deep. It's not based on science, because science, I mean, you gotta do your work on this, but science has basically debunked this notion that, you know, a person with dark skin is fundamentally different from a person with white skin. In fact, the distributions of genes and certain characteristics among us is so widespread that you can find, you may look at skin color as, you know, a stark difference. But a scientist would say, well, other than the skin color, like, there are people from two so-called different races who have more in common genetically of the same race. So there's a lot to get into that, and I'm not going to go into that right now. And we'll get some special guests to talk about this, guests who specialize in these different aspects of these concepts that I'm talking about. But right now, we want to keep a general understanding of it. So in short, when we talk about race, there are two distinctions you have to keep in mind. One is race understood in the biological sciences, and two, the ideology of race, which creates racism, and that's the issue of social sciences and also cultural history, most importantly, cultural history. Because what people call race, they're really talking about cultures. And so we are talking about ethnocentrism, cultural centricism in a sense like that. And so when we ask this question, going back to what it means to be black, we're dealing with issues of culture and issues of race that could be or that are improperly understood, misunderstood, confused. And why do I say that? Well, when we say black or African American, a whole bunch of stuff should come into your mind, but it, for most people, it doesn't. In fact, let me get something in here. Let me play a clip real fast. Obviously, I got to do a part two because time goes by so quickly. But let me play a quick clip of a comedian I heard last night from South Africa. And he came to America. He has a black mom. He's mixed in a sense. And, you know, here, when you mix, you're black. Black is black. Got one drop, you're black. Listen to what he said about being black. Check this out real fast.
4 months. Believe me when I tell you, this guy is a superstar in the making, coming to you all the way from South Africa. Put your hands together. Show your love for our friend, Mr. Trevor Noah!
I'm glad to be here, man. This was my dream. My dream was to come to America, you know, not for a job or money or anything. I've got a great life back home. I always came here because I wanted one thing, and that is I always wanted to be black. I grew up in South Africa during a time known as apartheid. And for those who don't know, apartheid was a law in the country that made it illegal for black and white people to mix, which was awkward for me because I grew up in a mixed family, well, with me being the mixed one in the family. My mother's a black woman, South African, and my father's Swiss, from Switzerland, so he was a white man. And, well, he still is. It's not like he changed. I say that, like, through hard work and determination, he became black. No, that did not happen. And, sir, you're fine. I see the white guy going, is that part? No, it's not possible. You are fine, sir. He's still very white, very white. And so they got together, my parents, black mom, white dad, which was against the law, but they didn't care. They were mavericks, you know? Yeah, my mom was like, woo, I don't care. I want a white man. Woo! And my dad was also, well, you know how the Swiss love chocolate, you know? So he was just, he was in there. And so they got together, and they had me, which was illegal. So I was born a crime. Which is something they never thought through, because as a family, we didn't live together normally. Like in the streets, my father had to walk around.
That's crazy. Did you hear that? I wish I could have played more, but we don't have much time. But this whole notion of coming to America to be black, there's so much in that. There's so much there. This, if you just think about that, it's like you want to go to another place to be black, but you're already born from a black woman. For example, if you're a Jew, you know, and you were born and your mother was Jewish, you're a Jew. You don't need to go anywhere to become a Jew. You could be on Mars. If your mom was a Jew and your pops was an alien, you're Jewish. You're not an alien or half human. You're Jewish. So what does this mean for a person to think? Now, obviously, there's some humor in there, but he was being very serious about it. He's making a very important point about what it means to be black. That is, it doesn't necessarily mean being born from someone in particular, although that is part of it. But there's something else. And so this is what I want to talk about And I'm going to open up the door. I see we got some people here who want to jump into this conversation. So the punchline for tonight, and we're going to have to continue this next time too, is that let me start off what the black identity is not. Being black. Heck, being African. Well, first thing, it doesn't point to a singular culture or a homogenous culture. It doesn't. Africa as a continent is replete with innumerable languages and cultures, right? Different countries. So being black and just like this big sense of the word doesn't say, it comes to like one point. So that means if you grab up a few black people and say, okay, this person's black, this person's black, this person's black, you're going to get like as many people you have, you're going to get different scenarios. Now, if you pluck them from the same family and household, obviously they're going to talk about the same thing. But the main point is that if you expand your reach, your sample space, and say, okay, I'm going to invite a black person to talk to from New York, one from North Carolina, another from Oklahoma, one from Canada, Jamaica, from South Africa, Nigeria, Ethiopia, okay, Zambia. You're going to get so many different responses, and even some might even reject this notion of blackness. So we got to understand that. That's the first thing. However, there is something we can draw upon that helps clarify what is kind of meant and should be understood about being black. And I put it like this. Being black is to exist in relation to an ideology, a way of thinking about the world, derived from the West, Europe and America, which distinguishes people based on certain generalizations of skin color, obviously dark skin, physical features, which persist in a variety of ethnic cultures, and all of whom, or all of which, have their roots in a large mass of land called Africa. So when somebody says black, like all of these things have to come to mind. Skin color more or less, certain physical features more or less, and one of these 1,000 plus different kinds of cultures and languages, all of which somehow derived from Africa, right? And this is important because, like, you know, you say dark skin color, you can go to places other than Africa and find people with dark skin color, right? And they wouldn't be understood as black. So what we're getting to is this racial aspect of black that has to come in now. And I define this, I see it as like a politicized scenario, politicized glass wall, all right, which mostly is derived from the Atlantic slave trade. And it is used to support a particular culture, cultural chauvinism, in a sense, right? And so there's a culture that has an idea that it is better than another. And not all forms of racism have to be necessarily hierarchical. Some can just be equally juxtaposed. And one says, well, we are one group and you are another group and we're just different, right? There are forms of racism that exist in that sense, seeing another group as a race. But in this particular case, the black identity, the black race, there's a hierarchy here. There's an inferiority situation on one side, and there's a superiority component to it. And that's it's whiteness against blackness, whiteness being superior to blackness. All right? And so when we say black, we're sort of referring to that. And that is important because that's going to set up everything we talk about for the following weeks. It's going to help us understand who we are as a people, as black people in America, and also as human beings. And it's going to talk to us about, help us understand how we are, in fact, global citizens. So we got to understand that. So To be black is to exist in relation to whiteness. Okay? A politicized whiteness in which whiteness is given a superior position. Now, some people may say, and I say, you know, it's not the same today in the same way, and that's true. That is true. So in many ways, it's not the same. But the effects of this ideology, at least when it was in its most healthy state during the Jim Crow days and slavery, is still here because these ideas are passed along and they're transferred. They're embedded in the cultures that derived from, you know, European exceptionalism and American exceptionalism in the 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries. And we can't, you know, we don't eradicate ideas like that. Like you can eradicate things, right? You have to challenge them. They have to die out. They have to wane and become diluted with other ideas such as freedom and equality and all that good stuff. So let me just take in a call. I think we got a call. We got two calls here. I see some people online. If you got some questions, type them up. If you got some comments, type them up. And so I want us to really get involved with this understanding of what it means to be black. What does that concept mean? So let's take in our first caller. Feel free to give a name and or a city or state. So here we go. Hello, welcome to the Roll of Ideas.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Ariel from Pittsburgh.
Ariel, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. So what you got on the plate to share with us?
Well, basically, I just want to say about one of the questions you had about what does it mean to be black.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, well, obviously, to be black, you have to have some type of African descent in you from a genealogical standpoint, from race, but also to be black, especially black in America, it can mean a lot of different things, both positive and negative.
Right.
Our black culture, we have, well, at least the black culture, we have a lot of good things about us. Like, you know, we're very talented in our, you know, music and our cooking style, dancing, singing, things of that nature, sports, but we also have a lot of downfalls, whereas we don't own anything and we're not unified like the other cultures in America are. And I feel that we have a lot of issues because not only that we have a lot of whites against us, we also are against ourselves. And we are in a bad situation compared to other races who, you know, even if they're a minority, they still have a sense of culture who they are. A lot of blacks in America, we have no touch of Africa or who we are, where we came from. We just know that we descend from Africa one way or the other. But if you put a black person next to a person from Africa, we're like worlds apart. Whereas if you put someone who's a Chinese American or born in America next to a Chinese person, they can be different, but they still a little bit more similar because that person knows more about their culture. So, you know, being black is very hard. And a lot of people try to say, well, it's not that hard, or you guys don't have that many issues. And, you know, it is very difficult. It's 2015, but we go through a lot of things that other people don't go through. And I think that our country don't understand that. I'm not sure black yourself, you don't get it. And, you know, we just have a lot of things that we still have to overcome.
All right. These are very insightful comments. And one of them, we're going to pick up on one of our upcoming shows, this whole idea that black people don't know their culture or are not as together as other people and white people. And, you know, and when we say that word white people, pretty much what I'm saying about black people could be applied, because white people is a very generalized concept, and there are different cultures within this notion of whiteness. However, because of that political category of white superiority, we can fit them all in that space, but it doesn't mean that all of the members of the white race share the same culture. And that we probably have to talk about too. Stay on the line. Let me bring in, we have another caller here, so let me bring in another caller real fast before we have to wrap up. But we're definitely going to continue this conversation next week because we're doing a series on this. And we're going to build and build and build. We're starting very fundamentally so that we can get fundamental understandings of the ideas invested in certain words, right? And so far we need to understand that when we say black, we're already calling attention to what it means to think about a culture and what it means to think about race. Let's bring in this next caller quickly. Hello, welcome to the Roll of Ideas.
How you doing? This is Ty from Washington, D.C.
Hi, Ty. Thanks for calling in. D.C. in the house.
Yeah. Yeah, so what makes, and this is what I found to be, and I stand by this, and it's very interesting, what makes a group of people unique is their heritage, and culture is a part of that. In your heritage, you have what's called heredity, which is just the biological inheritance, which from father to son, the mother to daughter. And then you have culture, which encompasses, you know, your values, maybe even religion, but also, and more importantly, your intellectual achievements. And so when you have those two things together, one person can say that they are who they are. They have inherited this from their parents because this is the culture their parents had. So this is who I am as a person. And this is who we are as a people because somehow we must have inherently inherited these values, beliefs, and the ability to do these things. Maybe we're great, maybe we're farmers, maybe we're great mathematicians, maybe we're known for these skills because these things have been passed on and this is what we're good at. Now, in terms of when the world started to expand, the known world, and people were starting to voyage out and get to know other cultures across the world, they had no concept of what was out there, but they identified the people based on their language and the geography. And so what ended up happening is that, of course, taxonomy comes into play, and you get your scientific terms like your Caucasian and Negroid and so on and so forth, which today almost means nothing anymore because the world has expanded over itself so much that people have said, okay, listen, these people have ideas, belief, and a culture similar to mine, so we're going to just use color words. We're going to say, okay, we're white because, why? Because, well, generally, you know, our ancestors, if they're Italian, French, or whatever, they come from this part of the world and they share these cuisines and this stuff and these economic values, so we're white, you know.
Right,
and these
right.
people are black because they come from that part of the world and this is what they have. But
right.
the thing about the black community in America is they don't have that kind of connection to heritage. So therefore, rather than say, I am like my mother and I have this culture because this came from my mother, their identity comes from their environment and what goes on around them. So they identify them by the conditions in which they live.
Wow. Ty, that's very good, insightful points. And you've more or less, you know, beat me to some of the points that I want to make in the upcoming weeks. But we definitely want to take step by step to get there. And we want to talk about this heritage and how we inherit things. We inherit our culture, and we also inherit our biological essence, our genes, our DNA. And what I want to talk about very soon is the fact that culture changes. And although we inherit our culture, we can adapt our culture. Ladies and gentlemen, we're running out of time. Ariel from Pittsburgh and Guy from D.C., I hope you two call in next week. You made this an awesome and dynamic show. We got to end tonight. Everyone have a great week. Enjoy the rest of your night, and I'll see you soon. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll be back.
All right.